The timelessness in you is aware of life's timelessness and knows that yesterday is but today's memory and tomorrow is today's dream. Khalil Gibran. Welcome to this week's episode of Warfare, Advancement, and Revisionism. My name is Preston Floyd, and as always, I am your host. I'd like to thank you all for joining me this week. I appreciate it. If you're a newcomer, welcome. Please enjoy this week's episode and peruse our backlog of episodes. And to any newcomers, or any returning listeners, thank you guys as always. I really appreciate your support. If you would all please like, rate 5 stars, all that kind of good stuff, subscribe, download, I'd appreciate it as well. Whatever your platform of choice asks you to do to show you're interested in a creator, please do so. No real feedback from last week's episode, so we're going to go ahead and continue on our look at Southern Europe, around Italy, the Adriatic, Southern France, Iberia, between 6 and 4,000 BC, BCE, whichever you prefer. And this will include the numerous successor material cultures to the Cardium pottery or Cardial ware culture. However, there is one thing we need to discuss first that kind of sits on the outskirts of the Cardial cultures and also is a neighbor of some other cultures we've discussed, and that is the Kakanj culture. Now, the name for this culture comes from the type site of Kakanj, which is a town in the modern country of Bosnia and Herzegovina, which as of 2013 had a population of around 12,000 people in the town limits proper. And it is located where the Zagoska meets the Zagoska River, I should say, meets the Bosna River. Now, I looked and looked, but I could not discover the etymology of Kakanj, other than it's believed to be Slavic in origin. It could be a personal name that got applied to the region, but all of it's just kind of wrapped in mystery. Now, Zagoska means something like more dense, or it could maybe in this situation mean deeper, as in the river gets deeper, denser as it goes. Now, the Bosna's name is also debated, but the one that makes the most sense to me is that it comes from the old Illyrian language, Basanasa, or Basanaz, which would ultimately have descended from the Pi word for running water, something like Begwa. Now, this culture lasts from around 6,200 to around 5,400 BC. However, the site at Kakanj itself had a permanent population well before that, possibly as early as 6,800, which leads to some claiming the site to be the oldest continuously occupied location in Europe. Though, of course, this is debated. In some cases, the population living at Kakanj is probably not much more than just a few dozen people. Now, the few centuries between 6,800 and 6,200 is just a generic early Neolithic settlement. No distinctive art styles for their pottery. It's all just very simple and utilitarian. And their economy is very straightforward agriculture, herding, with a sizable supplement to hunting, fishing, and gathering. The people who first settled in Kakanj had moved into the region after they moved up the Sava River via the Danube. And they were, genetically closely related to the people who settled in that region and would eventually become the Starchevo culture. And they'll have trade links with the Starchevo culture and the Cardium culture along the coast. They're kind of a bridge between those two and have trade links with both, and probably are the reason that you might see some Cardium goods at Starchevo sites and vice versa. Now, as time went on and Kakanj and several other sites along the Bosna and its tributaries began to expand, they begin to kind of establish a more unique and distinct material culture. And this isn't a huge area, but it's well watered, and you know, there are several mountains around them, which, you know, probably prevented a large group of people from moving in. But it's also a good source for stone, for tools, and things like that. And there have been around 30 or so sites that have been found in link with the Kakanj culture. And some will last into its successor cultures. And this does include Kakanj itself. Their pottery began to become more sophisticated, or at least more artistically expressive. It's mostly dark brown, some light, darker reds, with long vertical lines and small kind of circular impressions at the tops and bottoms of some of the vessels. And all of their vessels are polished. Their homes were long and rectangular with wooden frames covered with wattle and daub on the walls. And then, of course, they had thatched roofs also insulated with mud and daub and things like that. Typically, these houses were one or two rooms, and in some of the larger settlements, they were built in rolls. But in smaller sites, they were spaced out at kind of random intervals. These homes also had stone and clay foundations that they were built up on top of. Most of their tools were stone from the nearby mountains, but for tasks that required a little bit more precision, they would use bone, things like needles and cookware, things like that. They typically didn't use much stone for. As time went on, though, you begin to see more and more Starchevo-style artifacts appear, and eventually the old Kakanj style disappears completely. Now, why this happened isn't entirely clear, but there isn't evidence of an increase in large-scale violence. None of the sites disappear. None of them see huge boosts in their population. So it doesn't appear if it's, you know, a large-scale migration or invasion from Starchevo. It just appears as if, I guess, the Starchevo culture is maybe more vibrant and alluring, maybe. So, beginning about 5,400, basically it's an extension of the Starchevo sites, and it is for about 300 years. However, starting around 5,100, you begin to see a new culture emerge from this mixing of the Kakanj and Starchevo styles. And, of course, with some contact or continuing contact and increased contact with the Cardium culture. And this culture is known as the Butmir culture. Now, the name comes from the type site of Butmir, which is a neighborhood or district in the town of Ildiza. Now, I couldn't find etymology for either of these, but so apologies for that. And I did look for about an hour for both of them. Now, the Butmir culture lasts between 5,100 and 4,500 BCE. This was spread across most of the old Kakanj sites and a couple of new ones, with seven or so being fairly large. And these include sites called, one of the sites is Kakanj, but for the period relating to the Butmir culture is referred to as Obra II. With Obra 1 being the Starchevo lair of the site. Butmir is also, of course, one of the larger ones, and the largest is Okliste. These names all come from districts of modern towns. Now, Okliste is a district of the modern city of Visoko, and it's at its height, Okliste covered about 7.5 hectares. And had as many as 200 rectangular houses organized in rows that occupied between 4 to 10 meters, which estimates say that it could have had anywhere between 1,000 to about 3,000 people. It's hard to guess exactly because while all the houses were rectangular, they did vary in size, so it's hard to say for sure. I think if you average them all out to about 5 people per house, you get about 1,000, but some argue that some of those houses could have had double, or in some cases, maybe even triple that number. It was built up on a hill, and they probably dug some deep ditches around it. In some cases, I've seen different numbers thrown out. I've seen two, I've seen three. Most sources say it was surrounded by three fairly deep ditches, and these were layered. You had a ditch at the bottom of the hill, then you had a ditch a little bit further up, then another, and then you had the settlement itself. And this appears to have had one path or entrance leading into the settlement proper. This would go through. There was no ditches dug through the path. It was just a straight path up, and the ditches circumvented the rest of the settlement. I found a picture of a kind of a reconstruction or a concept art of it, and I'll be sure to post that in the YouTube episode. Now, Okleshte was probably the primary settlement of the Boutir culture, as it was pretty much at that size from the start, or the emergence of the cultural style. And it remained at around that same level, give or take, 100 people every couple of decades, until about 4,700, 4,800 BC, when it begins to shrink, with it eventually only occupying about a hectare of space at around 4,500, which is when the Boutmir artifact style disappears. And the decline of Okleshte probably is why the Boutmir also declines. Now, why Okleshte declines is a mystery, but it's possible that they used up the soil, or that there were environmental shifts for a period making the area much harder to live in, at least at that level and size. And remember, similar issues led to the collapse of the Vinca culture, who the Boutmir culture had close trade links with. Remember, the Vinca is kind of a successor in the old Starchevo heartland, and they're very tied in with each other, much the way the Starchevo and the Kakanj culture had been. So it's very possible that the decline of one could have led to the collapse of other, and vice versa. Now, their economy was also standard Neolithic fare. Crops of einkorn, emmer, wheat, barley, lentils, etc. They also had domesticated herds, mostly of cattle, but with a fair number of sheep, pigs, and goats present as well. Of course, hunting and gathering still took place, though it probably wasn't as much of a contributing factor as it had been during the Kakanj period. Now, as for their pottery, they had a larger number of shapes and sizes than the Kakanj did. It was still all monochrome, however, they did have a few different colors than the Kakanj did. And this includes gray ware, black ware, and a few different shades of brown, and maybe a shade or two of red, too. They also had a lot of different patterns that they would use, including swirling lines, straight lines, incised with dots and circles on the interior. They also had a lot of humanoid figures. And unlike kind of the places to the east that we've discussed with the rest of the Balkans, these figures are much thinner and taller. And they had a lot more detail in the face, and they had a lot of different facial features displayed or crafted into these figures than what you would see in sites to the east. Now, there have also been some animal figurines found, cows or bulls, deer, things like that. But these are very rare, and they're not very widespread across the sites. The next dates are debated, but either around 4,700 BC, which is right around the time the Boutmir culture begins its decline, or around 4,500 BC, as the Boutmir culture collapsed, a new material culture emerges, which is about 100 miles, which is 170 kilometers, to the west along the Adriatic coast. And this is known as the Danilo culture. The name comes from the type site of Danilo, which is today a very small village in Croatia. It has around 300 people, and their sites have been found along the coast of Croatia, as well as Bosnia and Herzegovina to the south. Now, this site itself is a rare kind of flat plain with a lot of good quality soil, and it has, it's basically this flat plain between these two ridges of kind of stone. They're not super high mountains, but they would give some type of defense or lookout of the settlement. And again, the land here is very fertile, and in the past, even within the last 100 years or so, Danilo had a much higher population. I think in the 1900s, it had up to 1,000 people. And during the Middle Ages, it was even more populated. It was a really good area for growing olive trees and things like that. However, due to a number of factors, including Ottoman occupation of the region and the need to fortify the area, that kept a lot of the soil from being used. However, as things turned to more peaceful pursuits, the population began to grow again. However, with the decline of the, you know, a lot of the smaller farms and things like that, again, the population has begun to drop. But there is good usable soil in the area. And this is a few miles inland from what you'll see with a lot of other Danilo sites. Not that far, but, you know, close enough to the ocean that you could get there within a day or two if you wanted to. Now, the Danilo pottery is kind of where you see a lot of differences between it and a lot of the other Neolithic cultures. It was brown, though they did have some darker vessels that were maybe like a black, but they would still paint these vessels black with kind of red bands as well. And their pottery, they would kind of make swirl patterns. These could conceivably be kind of like rolling waves. That's definitely a pattern that today you could use to make that motif. They also created what are known as rhytons, and these are ceramic vessels with, like, legs. So they could possibly be, you know, designed after animals. They're, like, four-legged, but without, like, without a head, basically. They're just open vessels. A lot of them had these big rings on the back of them. Was that for hanging them on the wall, or was that just an aesthetic choice, or was that just like a handle to help you hold it? Who knows? But that is, these are called rhytons, R-H-Y-T-O-N. And these are not the only people making rhytons, but, and the term itself, I believe, is Greek, but that's where that term comes from. Now, they had farmland. They did not farm as much as people further inland because, again, they're near the coast. But they used as much land as they could for farming. Their herds were not as large, not nearly as much cattle. But they did have some animals, domesticated animals. But a lot of their supplemental protein would come from fishing. And there's been a lot of long blades, tang points that they would use probably for spear fishing and things like that. Now, the Danilo culture will last into next season, however, only for a very brief period of time. This lasts between 4,700 and about 3,900 or 4,500. Again, I've seen different dates. It kind of depends. Which some of it's based on, you know, not being able to agree on the how deep the layers actually date to. There's a lot of debate, especially in coastal regions. It's not quite as easy to get a solid date on some of these, but in my opinion, it probably is the later date. But the Danilo also had trade links, not just with the Butmir culture, but also with sites in Italy across the Adriatic. So while the Cardium ware culture may have disappeared, there are still continuing links with peoples to the west in Italy.
And this might be a good time to talk about the etymology of the Adriatic. The exact source of the name is, it's kind of a what came first, chicken or the egg situation. A lot of people link it to an old Etruscan settlement. This is kind of like the westernmost expansion of Etruscan settlement in Italy. The town that the Etruscans called Atria or Hatria was kind of founded a few miles inland from the sea. Now, they were not the first people to settle there in large numbers. Prior to that, I believe there were an early group of Venetic peoples, which that's where the term Venetian comes from. The Venetic were an Italic branch of Indo-European speakers, and their word may be related to the Pi word, or their word for the sea may be related to a Pi word for a body of water, which is like op. And the Illyrians may have also referred to the sea as Adur. So the name could have also come from that. So the Venetians may have, or not the Venetians, excuse me, the Etruscans may have adopted the Venetic or Illyrian term for the sea, which was just close to Adur or Adra or something like that. Of course, Etruscan is not an Indo-European language. So what came first here? Did the Etruscans borrow it from the Illyrians or the Venetic peoples? Or did the name just come from the Etruscans who just happened to found the settlement? It sounded like Adur or something like that. Don't know. And I don't think anyone else really knows for sure. But historically, the Romans referred to it as the Mar Adriaticum or the Mar Hadriaticum, because they use both spellings on occasion. Also, at some points in the past, it was referred to by the Romans as Mar Superum, which is the upper sea, the lower sea being the Tiherian Sea, which is the portion of the sea south of Rome going to Sicily. So typically, when they use the term Mar Superum, they're not just referring to what we call the Adriatic, it also goes a little bit further south and to the west, maybe to like Sicily's, or to like right under the boot of Italy, what today we would refer to as, it would basically encompass the Adriatic and the Ionian Seas. And even the Greeks didn't really have a firm definition of the Adriatic. What they refer to as, or what we call the Ionian Sea, they would basically kind of move the border between the Ionian and the Adriatic. Sometimes it would be right off the Peloponnese, sometimes it would be a little bit further north. Of course, today, everyone acknowledges the boundary of the Adriatic as being between the Gulf of Venice and the Strait of Otranto. But again, that's modern definitions. In the past, it wasn't always as clear. The Romans did a really good job of eventually kind of hammering that in as to what's the Adriatic and what's the Ionian. Also, sometimes you'll see the term Mar Dalmaticum, or the Dalmatian Sea, or the Sea of Dalmatia. This typically did not refer to the entirety of the Adriatic. Specifically, it's off the coast of Dalmatia, which is today just like a little section of Croatian coast. So you'll see that as well. Now let's see, where are we at time? Okay, so we're about 24 minutes. You know, this is a nice kind of self-contained little mini region, so I think that might be it for this week. Next week we'll continue west and talk about the other successor material cultures, the Dacardium, where in those regions. So maybe another episode or two. Now next week, Friday, is yours truly's birthday, so I'll be traveling, so I'll try to have that episode out at normal time. We'll see. But I do appreciate everyone for coming out tonight. We also have Thanksgiving here in the U.S. coming up. And let me look at my calendar here and just make sure and kind of look and kind of let you guys know what's going to happen. So normal episode next week and the following week. The first weekend of December, I'm going to try to have a regular episode out, but I might skip that week. It'll just depend on how I feel after the long weekend. I may have trouble getting back into the swing of things, but we'll see. But I do appreciate everyone for listening to this week's episode. Please, again, like, subscribe, all that kind of good stuff. If you have any questions, comments, constructive criticism, please let me know. You can reach me at waradrevpod@gmail.com. You can contact me via direct message on X/Twitter, or you can comment on the YouTube videos, and I will respond there. Though, you know, it may take me a day or two sometimes, but you are welcome to contact me in any of those ways. I hope you have enjoyed and you have a good rest of your day and week from whenever you listen to this. And I will see you all next time. Peace.